Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Sources familiar with the matter have informed me it is Friday, the 25th of September. This is 2020. I'm not entirely convinced that's... I know the 2020 part is true. I'm still not convinced about September. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, you know what? It is Friday, but I'm going to call it right now. I think this is going to be a good show today.
I think so, too. And I can say that because you and I know what we're going to talk about already. So, as is tradition, you know, as best we have any kind of tradition around here, it is Security Friday. And Security Friday means we're going to give you some interesting security news and a few tips. And we're going to start with we've had a data leak from a company. I'm just going to leave it there. Take it away, Andrew.
So this week, this is really the only bad news. You know, as we said in the past, we always like to have at least one practical tip for people. So this is just one, what we call a pure news topic, and the rest is just tips from there on out. So here we go.
Yeah.
So this week, the WizKey security team, they found a Microsoft Bing data leak. This server that contained all this data, I think it was 6.5 terabytes, they said.
Wow.
It was unsecured. But the weird thing is they found that the server was protected at first until the first week of September, and then that password was removed. So they didn't really speculate on that part. When I read that, it kind of sounds like an inside job because I don't know.
Well, that would make sense. I mean, who else would have power to remove it?
Yeah.
I wonder if a system update or something may have just blown away the password file or something like that. Like, I mean, Bing is owned by Microsoft, and we've seen Microsoft system updates do weird stuff to things. So who knows? You know, maybe they rebooted and it just set the password to null or something. You know, like it could be pretty explainable. It's still embarrassing. I mean,
It's weird. It could still be, you know, like you said, completely innocent. We don't know that part. So the team did alert Microsoft to this on September 13th, and Microsoft quickly secured it 3 days later on September 16th. However, they did secure it quickly, but it was still a leak. And so here are the types of data that was included in this.
A bunch of people typing Google.
Yeah. The three people typing Google.
Yeah.
So a lot of search terms, which included the exact time the search was made, location, coordinates, Firebase notification tokens, which is... sounds like it's kind of more on the developer side. A bunch of data about coupons, but also a partial list of URLs that people visited from search results. So you click, so you type in something that you're searching. Okay, that was leaked. But also, when you find something that you want to click on, the whatever you clicked on was also leaked. And then finally, the device model and operating system. So it is definitely pretty serious.
That's a lot of specific data to have about anyone. So
and what I found interesting, so they say it was the target of a meow attack, and we've mentioned this on the show once before. A meow attack, as far as I know, it's some type of attack from unknown people. They find these unsecure databases, they completely delete them, and in place of the data, they just leave behind the word meow.
Yeah, I remember that. We talked about that before. So that's interesting. So yes, it's a data leak, and this is kind of a serious data leak. Not a breach because somebody didn't get in and pry all the data out, as much as, you know, like we said, like the password was gone and now anybody that wants to can go stroll around and take a look. So So yeah, if you're a person using Bing, I got some news for you.
And as WizCase pointed out, even though people's email addresses weren't included in this, there's still enough data to, if a hacker wanted to, they could probably get a good idea of like a fingerprint, as they say.
Someone with patience could put this all together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Combining all this data into, here's a possible target.
Yeah. And that's, and particularly, you know, when it comes to malicious intent, that sometimes is a thing that somebody is into. You know, there's sort of the quick hit of like, here's a whole bunch of usernames and passwords. I'm going to go have some fun. Like, but if somebody was really looking to like get into something a little bit more, that might be something they would do instead. So we have some more news. So that was it for that in that case. I'm going to add a bonus practical tip for today, which is DuckDuckGo doesn't save any of that information. So if you were to use DuckDuckGo as your search engine, nobody would have any of that data for you. And there's a whole bunch of reasons why DuckDuckGo is a good idea. And we'll talk about that on a future show. But for now, that's it for sort of the bad news for today. Now we have some other stuff to discuss. And the first is a new feature in 1Password.
Yeah, so from here on out, here's all the good news. So 1Password, we've mentioned plenty of times on the show before. Mm-hmm. They are a password manager. And if you haven't used one yet, we highly recommend it.
Yes.
It helps you create a unique password for every website, and it can store a whole bunch of other information like your credit card data. But if you don't want to use your personal credit cards, then you'll like this announcement. So yet another service that I've talked about is called privacy.com, and you hook your bank account to it, and it gives you unlimited virtual credit cards to use. And these credit cards can be like burner ones. So you can set it to use like, delete this card or make this card inactive after this purchase, or you can make a card so that you can only use it with a single merchant, like say Amazon, or you can just use it as a regular card and just use it for anything. Right. And you can set like transaction limitations and all that. So I personally love it. So the news here is that 1Password is partnering up with Privacy, and you can generate these virtual cards with the 1Password browser extension. This is good news.
So a thing I want to point out here is, first of all, like Andrew said, a lot of password managers allow you to store your credit card information. So the reason that's good is because suppose you went to Bing looking for something and you decided to go shopping for it. And now you're on the shopping website, right? And if you want to pay for something there, you don't have to store your credit card as part of your account information. If it's just one click to add it, you know, to fill it in at the time, then you don't have to store your credit card information on any of those websites. And then that way, when there's a data breach, nobody has your credit card number. And the other thing I wanted to point out is that what privacy.com is doing is something very similar to what Apple does with Apple Pay. Because if you look at the number if you go to your wallet and you look at the number for whatever your primary credit card is, right? You know, if you're viewing the number on your Diners Club card, you'll notice that it's not the same as the number on the physical card in your wallet, because Apple has created a virtual card, and that's what you carry around with you. So even if somebody were to get a hold of the wallet information on your phone, they still don't have your credit card number because of the way Apple Pay works. So privacy.com is doing the same sort of thing where the number that the credit card number that you're using, privacy.com has that tied back to a physical credit card number. But if somebody else tries to go use that number out in the world, it's probably not going to work because there's other factors at play that make that card number a valid card number. That's why when you add things to wallet, when you want to add another card to Apple Pay, you sort of have to wait for it to authenticate because your phone is talking to your bank. And like, who is this the right person? Are they in the right area? You know, do they have all the right information for all of this and on and on and on? And there's a whole bunch of handshaking that happens in that, you know, waiting to add to wallet. And then when it comes back to add to wallet, what you actually are carrying around is not the same 16 digits that are on the card in your wallet, the physical card. So the digital card is a different number. And then, you know, when it gets revoked, if you have to add it again because you got a new credit card number or something, that's that number is going to be different again. And, you know, and it's going to change. So it's the same sort of function. And that's one of the things I liked about this. So,
yeah. So really, the only difference is that privacy.com is completely online. So you can't add one of these cards to wallet and therefore pay using one of these cards in a physical location as at a store. It's just online transactions only.
Yeah.
But it's pretty much the exact same concept.
Yeah, and that's what I like about what privacy.com is doing, because I know there are a lot of people, because I've had this conversation a bunch, like, I don't want to carry all my credit card numbers around in my wallet. Well, you're not. Or on my phone. Well, you're not. You know, it's actually way safer to just have them on your phone than it is to have them in your wallet, because someone could take your wallet, your physical wallet, and, you know, you're out of luck. But if somebody gets your phone, first they have to get into your phone, and then even once they get into your phone, you know, it's still going to be a whole bunch of other stuff. So
yeah.
So what I would like to do now, we're going to pause for a second. We have more practical tips for you coming, but what I'd like to do now is take a minute and tell you about our sponsor this week. And our sponsor this week is MacPaw, and MacPaw makes an app called Clean My Mac X. Yes, it's X, it's not 10. It's a utility that you can install on your system, and it does a lot of cleaning and optimizing. So it will run maintenance scripts that a lot of people aren't running all that often, because some of them are things that are supposed to run every day or every week, and most people have more uptime than that. So this will run some of those scripts for you, and it will delete temp files and cache files that are hanging around that you don't need anymore. It'll get rid of log files and all that stuff that shows up in the system log console viewer that you don't need anymore. And it'll also do a quick malware check, and it can do some basic optimization for your Mac, help you figure out permissions. That's another thing we talk about a lot on Security Friday, is knowing what permissions everything on your computer has. So it'll help you do a quick permission review to make sure that only the stuff that should have access to your camera and your microphone actually do. You can get a free trial of Clean My Mac X at macpaw.app/TDO. That's macpaw.app/TDO. They are currently gearing up to make sure that they are fully compatible with Big Sur upon release. So you don't even have to worry about making the transition to a new operating system. Get control over your files and clean up your computer with Clean My Mac X. We'd like to thank MacPaw for sponsoring the show today. Now, the other thing we want to talk about, we have many practical tips. And the first one is, like, on paper, this is Andrew's sweet spot right here, because it's iCloud Keychain, which is a secure password manager, and Shortcuts.
Yes, we all know I love Shortcuts.
Yes, pink puffy heart Shortcuts, I would say.
So with this tip, this comes from Ricky Mondello. Ricky works on app and website authentication at Apple, as well as password authentication, password management.
Yes.
Earlier this week, they recently created a shortcut that lets you quickly access iCloud Keychain. And what I mean by that is, instead of tapping on Shortcuts, scrolling down and finding the password section and tapping on that, you just tap on the shortcut and it will directly jump you to the password section,
which is
obviously
awesome.
Good, like less steps is good, right?
Yeah, and so sometimes you need to get into that, like, on a regular basis, right? Because you can share passwords out of iCloud Keychain, which is something that's very nifty. If you tap on the password, you get an option to share, and I think you can airdrop it to somebody near you. So if there's a password, you know, to an account, and you have it and the other person doesn't, or if the standard little pop-up for helping somebody get on your Wi-Fi network didn't actually show up, you can still send them the Wi-Fi password and they can use it, and they don't have to type anything, and it's super handy.
So, yeah. It really is. So the second part of this tip is that This works not just with passwords. There's another shortcut that I've found on this website called Routine Hub, and I don't remember the person who created it, but they acknowledge in the shortcut that they are building on the work of Federico Vittici over at Mac Stories.
I think we all are.
And so what this shortcut does is you tap on it, and then you get to choose which area in the settings app you want to jump to. And then it finalizes it by creating a different shortcut that does the same thing, where you just tap on it, and then it just jumps you directly into that area.
Nice.
So it's awesome.
Yeah. Honestly, I have one shortcut I built myself, and it's two steps. And the first is set the playback output to my AirPods, and the second is play a sound so that I know when the sound, that little sound comes through my AirPods, that I'm connected to the right thing. That's it. That's the one I built myself. It's two steps. Everything else is either based on something Federico did or something that Matthew Castanelli did. So,
yeah,
like everything else I'm using is something from them. Hi guys. Thank you. So like shortcuts is a really, and especially as it continues to get integrated, as the shortcuts utility itself gets more access to more pieces of the operating system, the better this stuff's going to get. It's going to be it's just going to continue to evolve and turn into something really cool. So I'm really excited to see how people are using it. I want to make sure we have enough time to talk about your last piece today. So just real quick, I want to point out, if you have a killer shortcut that you're using, you can share it with us at observations@macobserver.com, Team O'Daly on Twitter, or leave comments in the show notes. Now, the thing I want to talk about is, Andrew, you discovered this ad tracking software called Blacklight, and you took Blacklight and pointed it at macobserver.com.
Yes, so I discovered this tool called Blacklight. It's from The Markup, and what you do is you enter the URL of whatever website you're interested in. It scans it for user tracking technology like third-party cookies and advertising analytics. So not only did I use this on the Mac Observer, I used Safari 14. Now has a built-in tool that shows you which trackers are available on each website, and it blocks them. So here's what I found on the Mac Observer. The article that I wrote, I just focused on Safari. I did use Blacklight. I just didn't write that part of it.
Okay.
So with Safari 14, when I was writing this, it found 6 advertising trackers on the Mac Observer, and they are from ezoic.net, Google Analytics, Google Syndication, Google Tag Manager, Google Tag Services, and then finally QuantServe, aka QuantCast.
Okay.
And as I noted in my piece, I don't have anything to do with our ads, so I don't know why we're using these. This is just what I found, if users are curious.
Yeah. And, you know, it seems only fair to put ourselves under, you know, to point at that on our own website. That makes a lot of sense. So I thought it was interesting how much there actually was there. That was the part to me that was surprising, I suppose.
Yeah. And as we talked about before the show, maybe I should do a separate piece using just Blacklight, because with Safari 14, they found 6 trackers. Blacklight found a lot more. Oh. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, but it found something like maybe, I don't know, 20 trackers and 40 third-party cookies, something like that. So it's a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the part, like I said, the part to me that was interesting was how much stuff was actually there. And if people are running ad blockers or whatever, they're not going to see, you know, they're not going to see those things anyway. So I thought it was interesting to find out how many there were. I knew there were a few, but I didn't realize it was quite that many, even by Safari's report. So I'm even more surprised that Blacklight found way more. So if nothing else, even if you don't write it up, I would like to know what those results ended up being. So, it's not like MacObserver doesn't have a bunch of my information anyway, but.
You know. Right. It's interesting. Blacklight does, they are transparent about here's what methods we use. Mm-hmm. We don't really know what methods Safari is using.
That's true.
There's kind of maybe a transparency thing going on.
Mm-hmm. That was interesting. As we find out more, we will report it to you. And if you have other security news, make sure you let us know. Observations@macobserver.com. That's going to do it for us today. Andrew, thanks for being here.
Yes, thanks for having me. And as always, thanks for have a good weekend, everyone.
And I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you on Monday. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and let's be careful out there.